So come on, Charlie.
Charlie. Damn, sorry, I'm an alcoholic. As Tim said, I'll tell you my sobriety, 86-15-14, which gave me 11 years yesterday without a drink. Yeah. I'll tell you what, it doesn't seem like 11 years, and I'm learning up to the last second all the time. Still using this stuff. Get through the day one day at a time. My favorite speaker is this guy named Adam Todd. Tim turned me on. He always says, this program is a program grounded in the truth. And I used to think about that all the time. And I guess it's grounded in the truth because it's people's actual experience. Everything in the book's true because it actually happened to people. It's what happened. It's the truth. You know, I figure I'll just tell the truth. It's taken me this long to remember the timeline of my life. 11 years. To put it all together, honestly. And I can finally do that, so I'm just going to follow that line and start off in 1965. I was born. My parents, I was in a nice family. We had pretty much anything we wanted. My parents were cool. They partied, but not like, you know, I consider partying, not like we, I, you know. They drank and they had parties and they were nice folks. And I had a good time. And I noticed all the people were always having a good time that they were with, all their friends. So, you know, as I sit here tonight and think about that, I can understand why it was so appealing to me, perhaps. But I knew that when I was 12 years old that I wanted to take a drink. I had seen the Lucille Ball show, and she had made a drink on the television show, a screwdriver. And so that was the only drink I knew how to make. So I made one, and I drank it, and it wasn't bad. And then the only other drink I knew was scotch water, and I made one of those and drank it, and it was awful. And you know, I threw up and all that stuff, and yada, yada, yada. But then we go out and have beer. We take it out with us. And the reason I'm even getting to go out is because we're being babysat by the older sister, and she's going out with her friend, dragging us along, and they don't care what we do as long as we stay out of the way. So, you know, there were flies with alcohol. And so it got where I can remember just one of the first few times that we were, like, going out. We went out Friday night with some beer and we had some cheap wine. And then we were going out on the lake the next day. And I can remember looking at what was left, the wine, the half a bottle, and, like, four beers left, thinking, that's not going to be enough. Inventorying the alcohol I have for the next day at 12, 13 years old. Both of them, since my grandparents were alcoholics, by the way. None of them ever made it to AA. Three of them died as complications. Four of them, really, because I had three grandfathers. Yeah, none of them ever made it to AA and died as a result of it. So, and my father is an alcoholic. I don't know if anybody's familiar with it, if you ladies are familiar with a heavy drinker. But the heavy drinker is somebody who can drink alcoholically. And then when faced with losing their job or getting divorced or getting sick or something like that, they'll stop. I don't have to go to AA or do anything. They just stop. And my father was like that. But me, that was a different story. By the time I got to the University of Georgia, when I was 18 years old, 1983, I got drunk every day. Go out and, you know, have shots and do a certain amount. No, I got drunk every day, just one way or another. There was a 12-pack of Budweiser in my refrigerator every day, and it had to be replaced every day. Except that man can buy it on Sunday. I drank every day unless I was hospitalized or in jail for the next 28 years. Oh, boy, I did a lot in that time. You know, when I got down to university, everybody was drinking and chasing girls. That's my addiction right there. That the insecurity of being an alcoholic, being at school with all these people and just being so insecure and so scared. Now, as wonderful as it was, being an alcoholic, it was bad. Now, I wasn't drinking. I didn't have the alcoholic feelings except for these. Like, you know, I wasn't withdrawing and didn't have to have a drink in the morning and never thought about drinking in the morning. Nothing like that. But, you know, I got drunk every day. And I got out of school, and I went home to work for my dad's company, and got a house with some guys, and all we did was chase women and drink, and work, you know, go to work and chase women and drink. And so finally, 1995, I decided I'd get married. I did. Married a country girl. She's awesome. She was. She is. Well, I'll tell you what. Later on, I worked the steps, and I found out about the way I had treated my ex-wife. And other people. And, you know, there's some things that just make you want to shake your head and go, damn, that relationship was one of them. She finally ditched me in 1999, she saw the handwriting on the wall. She told me she wanted a divorce. I couldn't believe it. I said, all right, honey, you're 30. You got to decide whether you want a baby. She said, I want a divorce. Great. So that just gave me an excuse. You know, I felt bad and all depressed and sad. That was just an excuse to crank it up a notch. I actually thought that I could get drunker and people could see me and they would say, oh, he just went through a divorce. It's okay. That was my rationale. That I could crank it up a notch and it was okay because everybody knew. That's exactly what I really believed. So finally, that same year, state, local, and federal authorities came to my house. Nothing happened. They didn't get anything, but I was arrested or taken to my home to be searched, kind of right in front of everything where people could have been passing and seeing it. And everybody knows my family in town, so I just hit the road. And I said, I got to get out of town. This is not fair for them. So I got impounded with Helen, Georgia, of all places. And I got my real estate license drunk and high with my dad. We got it at the same time. He was so pissed off that I made a higher score than him. I was drunk the night before. So, you know, 1994, before that, 1997, I guess she's probably thinking about the divorce at this time. And it's Sunday, I'm off. I want to go over to my friend's, play pool with, and want her to come. All the wives are going to be there. Let's go. She wouldn't come. So I got no more drunker than usual. Get some pills and whatnot. When I left, the fog rolled in, and I lived on the country, cow pastures. You couldn't see in front of your face. It was 70 degrees in December. All this fog had come up. So I'm like, oh my gosh. And I like, it's my policy to get behind the car in front of me, follow their red lights, and let them run into something first, the cow or whatever. And so I followed the red light. It was my neighbor. It was the guy's Christmas lights. It kind of went like this, and I followed right into a culvert. And so that was my first brush with death as a result of drugs and alcohol abuse. I've seen that in the movies. She divorced me. I went to hell, and that's, you know, I was drinking just like, I wasn't drinking in the morning yet, but I was feeling rough in the mornings. High anxiety. I think I was high dry even every morning. I'm pretty sure I was. Just not because I was sick from alcohol. I was just sick. Anxious. And of course, you know, as y'all all know, that's not a good feeling. I was able to kind of just knock my way around for the next 5 years. My first experience with recovery was not at an Alcoholics Anonymous program or anything. I had an overdose of outside issues, prescription issues. My little brother did not like AA. And I was sent off to a Scientology rehab. Oh, yeah. In Canadian, Oklahoma, which, if you don't know where Canadian is, on the border of Texas. And it's this nice old country casino that was built by the Civilian Conservation Corps in the 50s. Like Lloyd Wright designed it. But it was a bunch of BS. I did get to meet Catan Cruz. Yes, he came out. And I gave him the VIP tour. He's only about this tall, y'all, I swear. I mean, for real, he's only about that tall. But he does, he's charismatic. He's like, there's a TV light on him. He's got makeup on the whole time, but he's not. It was pretty cool. And he came to our graduation that night. He came back, went to our graduation. He was with Katie Holmes. And it seemed like he was a real nice guy. He got up there and told us how he respected us doing what we were doing. But that didn't get me sober or keep me sober one little bit. That means I went on doing various jobs, this, that, and the other, didn't get married, had girlfriends, all the way till 2007. I decided I was going to, I had just sold my little gas station that they had given me after one of my car accidents. After a car accident, I said, hey, will you go run this for us? We can't do it. And so, what the hell, yeah. And I did, and I ran it for them, and I started making it profitable, and I took over the bank note for him, so it was mine. I sold it for $1 million, made $250,000 on it, and I decided I was going to go to Costa Rica, one-way ticket, and learn Spanish, and come back and take games by storm. It's a great idea in 2007. You know, here I am in Costa Rica with $10,000 in my pocket, anything I want to do, and I'm miserable. just because it's a bad mixture of alcohol or something at that time. I was loaded. But, you know, I look back today and only I could be miserable in paradise with $10,000 in my pocket. Miserable. I look back on that. Oh, well, I fell off a cliff while I was there. It was the first night I was there. I went back with, I got there, went, walked to my little school, and they had left, everybody was gone. They left to go pick up people at the airport. So I was left to hang around in town all day long, the little village. And I met up with some locals. We went down to the beach. We started smoking weed and drinking. Blah, 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 blah. End of the night, or just towards the night, they say, oh, you got to come home with us. You got to come home with us. I said, nah, man, I better go to my school. Mom, I better go to my school. Nah, you got. They said, we got cocaine. I said, okay. So I went out there with them, and it rains every evening in Costa Rica. It rained like hell. It didn't take me long to realize that they were gay. Which I didn't mind, all right. In fact, there were like two older guys, and there was this one good-looking Spanish guy who smelled like Spanish from Spain. Really looked like a model. And they, I figured out when they opened a door off the kitchen, and it had just a king-size bed in it with only barely that much room to walk around. It's just kind of a... And they pointed to the guy, the good-looking guy, pointed to the bed, pointed to me, and I was like... I told them, I said, that's not the way I like it. And well, I mean, they were cool about it. So it was all good, and I was going to stay, but then they had their friends over, and a big party of men. And I got a resentment against one of them. He was big. And I said, I got to get the hell out of here. It was 5 miles to my school, but it was to the bridge, take a left. 2.5 miles to the bridge, 2.5 miles to my school. And I said, I got to get out of here. I'm going to walk. 2.5 miles, 5 miles. And I'm walking, you know, like this, middle of the road. And I get down, I see the light on the bridge, you know, it's like that. And there's a trail that goes off the left. I'm like, shortcut. I can hit a shortcut on a 90-degree angle. So I took the path, and it was to a scenic overlook. And I stepped right off of it. I laid in that river all night long. I broke my big bone, and I didn't drown. I didn't hit my head. I didn't hit my lungs when I fell. I landed on rocks. But I didn't die. And I just kind of floated down the river till I stopped and just laid there and called and called and called. Nobody came. And I thought I was going to climb up the hill, and I tried, and it hit her too bad. So the next morning, some people heard me yelling again. They came and got me. A lot of ambulance rides later and whatnot. I'm back in the United States, falling off a cliff, drunk in a foreign country. So the next few years are just me being irresponsible and whatnot until I get so depressed. You know, I feel so bad, so I'm anxious and stuff that I want to change, and I think I need to quit drinking. I show up in an AA meeting. I knew where to go. I went and saw people I knew there, the guys that were a little bit older than me. I was like, man, I came at the perfect time. You know, they've been here 3 years. I'm doing great. I've been coming to meetings and stuff and stayed with my brother, and I decided to take a small amount of prescription pain medication. And because I have a sleep apnea, it was just enough to, even though it's not enough, it's something prescribed amount is enough to nearly kill me. So here I am waking up from another overdose on this one. This one got close. I didn't know. I mean, I was in the ICU, but nobody was saying, hey, you're about to die. You're about to die. Your oxygen level's not. I'm just laying there going, Apparently, they called the family in. So I still don't know what's going on. They called the family in, and then a preacher came that was not from my church. He's from another church, but I knew him. And he asked if he could pray over me. And I said, hell yeah. You know, my church is sending out some third string guy I've never seen before. I had a little resentment. So he prayed over me, and everybody swears that after he left, I all of a sudden got out of the woods. So when he suggested a rehab, I went to it. I had no idea what, I did a little bit of AA, but I had no idea what I was getting to. It was a Christ-centered AA. So they let you take a Bible and a big book. That's it. And 12 and 12. And I don't know about job when I'm incarcerated or can't watch TV and do what I want to. I read a lot. I don't read at home. I don't read. I read news, you know, but I don't read. But boy, I read when I'm in there. And I chew up literature big time. So I overdosed and I woke up and I'm at this place and all they let you have is the big book in the Bible. Well, I read the big book. Start off the stories. Read all them, I swear, three times. And I got the NA book. Read all the stories there. Then I went to the basic text and read it a few times. And then I ran out. I said, you know what? I'm gonna, this is exactly how I said it. I'm going to have to read the fucking Bible. That's exactly what I was thinking to myself. But my mother had given me this Life Application Study Bible, which had footnotes, explanatory footnotes. So I can't figure those damn parables out. But, you know, it's explaining all this stuff to me, and it's talking about the same stuff I just read about in that big book. I saw humility in that thing. I saw pride. I saw all these key words from at AA. And I'm like, what the heck? And I'm like, you know, what a deal. I can stay sober, please my heavenly father and my earthly father at the same time for free. You know, what a deal. I wish it was that easy. I left that place. They don't let you work three steps. I left that place high on God. I felt like I was in his hand for months. Pink cloud. Year of pink cloud. Greatest feeling in the world. But I did not, because I had understood this program, understood about forgiveness, I didn't need to work the rest of those steps. I just didn't need to. I understood. I forgive everybody. I couldn't come over resentments even. I had to go back to, when I finally did work the steps correctly, I had to go back to the times I could recall that I was most upset and go off of that. So finally, I get there. I participate. I love it. I got a girlfriend in the program, home group. I didn't tell my story. And then I have an operation. I'm taking the girl from the program. She's taking care of me. I'm getting an infection. So first time, they described a big old bottle of Percocet. Second time, by the time it was all better, I was hooked. I didn't drink, though. Until I was broke. And I started drinking that cheap beer at the convenience store. You know, 8.40 for whatever, 8%. And that's where it ended. And I ended up getting back to AA, crawling in there. Stay close to the program again, but just it was not ready to surrender or give up or whatever. I don't know why. Because I knew it worked. I could see the people. I could see the logic. It was easy. It wasn't that crazy. I don't know if it was reservation or just my utter love of alcohol. I don't know what it was. But it took a couple more white chips. From the time I entered there in January of 2010, my sobriety date is not until June 2014. And there's only about three white chips in there and a lot of pain in between. If anybody ever tells you that the relapse is way worse than any of that, they are right. I mean, I'm talking about the chaos picks up right where it left off. It's the damnest thing I've ever seen. You know, drugs and alcohol, you know, what if alcohol picks right up where it was, but the chaos does. It just blew my mind. And finally, let's see. I was standing in a mirror in a trailer. I just slept on a big pile of dirty clothes. It's my bed. Somebody's let me stay at their house. And I get up out of bed, I'm in my boxers, and I'm literally looking in a mirror. It's an old smoky mirror. And somebody's leaned up against the wall, probably cut the hell out of you, Phil. And I'm looking at myself, and I'm like, God, I said, this sucks. You know, this sucks. Anything's got to be better than this shit. You know, I'm like, where are the girls? You know, they didn't want to sleep on the pile of dirty clothes with me. And I knew, you know, the wonderful thing about it is I knew exactly where to go. But first I had to get a detox. because I'm at the age where I've got to have a medical detox. So getting down there was a challenge. I went four nights in a row to the local hospital to try and get into the Laurelwood, the local detox. I've got insurance and everything. No problem. They didn't have a bed three nights in a row. I was desperate. And I remember I went down to the package store Sunday. I went in there. I had figured out I was going to buy. I had $3 on debit card and I had $2 in cash. I was going to be able to get a pint. And I got down to the damn liquor store and they said, we got a $5 minimum on the debit card. So I grabbed a bottle of Sped Castola. That was the last drink I had. I drank that bottle. I managed to walk all the way home, drank that bottle, woke up, and it was still daylight. And so I don't know. I guess in all my travels trying to get into a detox, they handed me out papers and stuff. And there's this 1-800 number I call. It doesn't say suicide prevention or anything like that. I don't know what it is. And the lady answers, and I said, man, she says, man, let me just tell you what my problem is. And I said, man, I'm trying to get a detox, and I can't. She says, son, I can see every bed in Georgia right now. And I got you one in Lawrenceville, 23 miles away if you can get there. I said, hell yeah. Now, getting to Lawrenceville, 23 miles away, was the difference. I had lost my car by then. I didn't have any money for any cab or anything. My family wouldn't talk to me. None of my friends. So I had to hit mom one more time. Mom, please. And she did. But she left and she wasn't coming back to get me. Let's just put it that way. So after a couple of days, I was on detox. I even took a shot that makes sure you don't like opiates or alcohol, all this stuff. I was ready. But then it came time to get out. And I wasn't ready because I didn't have anywhere to go. Nobody was coming to get me. I was in another town. I was going to go up a quick trip and trying to hitchhike. So I said, well, I'm going to stay one more night. Right. So the next day came and they wanted to kick me out again. I said, nobody's coming to get me. They said, oh, yeah, somebody's here right now. I said, really? I said, yeah. So I go out there and it's a guy from the AA clubhouse that I go to that. We're not like buddies or anything, but he's at every single meeting. He helps a ton of people. He shares every time. He makes an announcement every time. Mr. AA, he's a good guy. He's picking me up there. And I, like I said, we're not like buddies in the program. We know who each other are. That's it. And he picks me up. He says, you can let my house. He rents room every now, you know. You can let my house. I'll be your sponsor. You pay me a little rent. That was it. We got busy as soon as we could on those steps. And, you know, I was all familiar with 1 through 3, but when I got that 4th step, you know, the one I couldn't think of any resentments or anything, boy, did I learn a bunch about myself in the 4th step. You got all these character defects. You'll see all these lists of character defects. Well, mine was the same word that I don't see used a lot. It's the word inconsiderate. I was inconsiderate of everybody. I didn't really care how what I did. It just never occurred to me. And then when I realized how I treated my wife, it's like, here's what we're going to do tonight. Here's what we're going to party on. Here's what we're going to do it with. And here's what time we're having sex. That was pretty much how it went for my wife. Not ever. Honey, what would you like to do tonight? Or, you know, do my friends bother you? Nothing like that. Ever. Just sweet, wonderful person. But that's how blind I was with selfishness and lack of knowledge about myself. And I found out in that 4th step. And from there, when I found out I was a real asshole, I was. I spent the rest of my life trying to do the livings and amends because I was, my thoughts, you know, if I said, make a list of people you'd harm, I said, well, I have to write everybody I've ever met because everybody I ever met, I was using to get to where I needed to go. And that was to get messed up. If I showed up for a function at my parents' house, that was to keep them off my back. So later on, I could do what I want. It commanded everything I did. everything I did. Where I went to eat, everything. The whole thing, I didn't start drinking in the morning until beer extended my drinking career, I think, by many years. I drank beer because you could drink all night and all day. I knew that if I drank a drink, like I like to drink beer, that I would not be able to drink with a couple and have to go home or something. I don't want to do that. And then I started dating when I got back to Gainesville and after Costa Rica, and the girls always wanted vodka, and that was the end of me. It wasn't a long time before I was getting up at 6:30 a.m. and having a couple of big tumblers of vodka and whatever was in the refrigerator and watching Fox News till about 8, and I go lay down for 15 minutes, take a shower, and then go to work. Come home at lunch, full hour, drink it up again. Then after work, it's after work. That's how my life went for a long time. So needless to say, I was ready. And that man came and got me. We went through the steps. There's so many things I didn't understand. I didn't know what humility meant. I've been to school. I didn't know what resentment meant. I really didn't. And I hear all these words and stuff. So I'm learning every day. Just by doing it one day at a time, being around AA, I'm able to grow every day. I learn something new every day. The meeting I was in before, the lady's talking about new ideas. We have new ideas. I couldn't even figure out what do you mean new ideas? Well, new idea, like, it's a new idea for me to get up in the morning and get on my knees and pray to God that I'm going to turn my will and my life over. You know, you're in charge and I'm not. That's a new idea to me. But I realized I needed new things to do. John, my home group, he says, you know, your will is what you think. My life is what you do. Okay? My will is what I think. My life is what I do. And I got to start thinking about what I did. And I did the same thing every day. I got up, planned it, got it, tried to get away with it, repeat. That was my life. Those were my ideas. One day, you know, that's what I did every day. So I realized I needed a whole new life. And AA gave that to me. Gave me a book. Gave me a club with people like me. It gave me things to do every day. New things to do. New ideas. I needed that because I needed a whole new life. Because if my life was what I do, then boy, I know what I did. And you know, I'm not going to say I didn't have laughs and have a good time. I did. Even when I was a child, I felt like I was like, everybody knew something and I didn't know it. And they were privy to something and I wasn't. And I just was kind of different. I always felt that way. And, but, you know, just, I had so many great opportunities. So many things I could have done in life. So all this, all that. But alcohol was more important. But it's like they say, I wouldn't change a thing because, what I say, God led me to AA and AA led me to God. I was sitting in that meeting and I go, how did I not know this shit already? You know, I thought the knowledge I discovered was better than any lottery that I'd ever won. It wouldn't trade it because I got to think, you know, I might have gone to my grave not having a higher power at all. Ever in my life. But because of my disease and my dissolution, I've got one today. And I just cannot imagine what it would be like not to have one. You know, everything AA's given me, a higher power, a home group, meetings, just everything they have given me are everything I needed to be equipped to live life on life's terms. If I go out and drink, then that's because I wanted to get drunk today. Because AA's giving me every possible avenue and solution as to what to do in this new life. Plenty of solutions other than taking the drink to get a perspective on it. We got a problem, take a drink, and then we'll get a perspective on it. It's not like that to do. Say, I've got different solutions when I've got problems. And that's to face them head on. And take it as it comes, because, you know, I'm a huge fan of one day at a time. You know, I can stay sober today and the whole stay sober for the rest of your life, that's fine. I'm staying sober today. And, you know, tomorrow's a fresh start, and that's what I like about it, because today I can try harder tomorrow. It's a program of redemption and forgiveness. You know, I know a lot of people are in here because they're in a program. You know, I've been there too, and I got a lot of good experience. Went to a lot of meetings, met a lot of people. I didn't get sober, but it was all part of my journey. It was all stuff I learned. You know, if you don't get stay sober this first time, please remember everything you heard in here. Because if you make it back, and I'm gonna say if you go back out, then you'll draw upon these things to make that decision. For me, I was having a discussion with some young ladies down in the smoking area, and we were talking about how the alternative, if I always do what I've always done, I'll always get what I've always got. Truth number two. Okay, I did all that, and I kept getting all I got, and I was ready for it. And you know what? Today, I do what I always do, and that's one day at a time, try and stay sober and do the things I'm supposed to. And I always get what I always got. I wake, I go to bed sober and happy, and can fall asleep because I hadn't been screwing and lying to people all day long and lying to them and trying to get over on them. So I can make myself feel better about me. I love AA. I love Tim. I love this clubhouse. I used to come to the speaker meeting every Monday night here. You know, just the whole, all these little spots along the way in sobriety and back there, you can still see, I can still see where all go to this culminative sobriety today. Those things that have happened are the things that I can draw experience from and help others and to help myself. This is a no-lose program. You might lose that buzz you're used to, but you'll get a new one. But, it's either for me. I have lost everything except my life. Self-respect, everything except my life. And the alternative is to gain everything. Love back, self-respect, God, all this good stuff. I ain't the smartest person, but it's pretty obvious to me. I am the alcohol they describe in the doctor's opinion. And if I have one drink, you know, I'd like to go out and get drunk this afternoon. I really would, but I know I would have to drink tomorrow. Okay? Been down that road, folks. I'm not going back down that road. And I haven't been to jail since the day I got that headache, too. I must say that. Because I'm not doing anything wrong. I don't have to lie today to anybody. I'm just staying sober. Oh, well, thanks for everybody's attention.
Thank you, Charlie. That was really good. You made me smile inside and outside. Thank you for your service.
First I slip, and then I trip to a hope-filled dream. You rescue me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promise is, all is. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get this word we need. On a broad highway, God won't try, we walk eternally. Look into love's window for a heart. Something. and I said,